Hello, this is Hugh Barron. I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Jay Costa, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Costa at any point this evening, you can press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Jay Costa.
Thanks, Hugh, very much, and I want to thank folks who are participating in tonight's telephone town hall and say thank you for that opportunity to be able to have a conversation with constituents in our district. We one of the things that we like to do is try to stay in touch with the folks that we represent here in Harrisburg as a collective representative in Harrisburg here for the folks in the 43rd District. It's been an honor and a privilege. I think the best way to stay informed, this is one of those ways in which we can do that, you know, to talk about the issues that are important to folks. Right now, we're in Harrisburg. We just completed session about a half hour or so ago. We worked on a couple of bills that are moving forward. Tomorrow, we're going to be dealing with a few more pieces of legislation, one dealing possibly with the restoration of some resources back into the budget. Another one would be reducing the size of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives in terms of the number of members. A couple of amendments also along those lines. But as we go forward, you know, we have a conversation that we have to close out a 15-16 budget, and we're going to work to be able to do that. Through this process, I've been fighting to provide for restoration of a lot of our human service programs, which I think have been critically underfunded over the course of the past several years, and the consequences are being felt at our local level, at our counties. We're going to work hard to continue to make investments in education. Again, for the past 4 years, we've been able, unfortunately, we have not been able to fund our education school districts in the manner which I think is in which they deserve to be funded. And at the end of the day, we have to continue to work to be able to do that. So we're going to fight for continued education, not only in basic ed or K-12, but early learning programs, most importantly. To me, the best dollars we spend. But also higher ed. We have to recognize that, you know, Pennsylvania has one of the highest levels of higher education tuition costs, and we got to do more along those lines to bring those costs down. Beyond that, though, we have things like how we're going to create jobs. We've gone from, you know, one of the top states in the country and the top states in the Northeast to the bottom of the rankings with respect to job growth and job creation. We have to reverse that trend. And in order to do that, we have to make investments, and we have to look at our business tax climate to figure out the best way to be able to grow those jobs in Pennsylvania. And also investing in economic development in our communities. Our communities, some of those are cities, some of our boroughs and townships, they have been abandoned for the past several years with resources to be able to help them revitalize themselves. And the state can play a role. They can serve as a catalyst along those lines of investments, and that's what we want to be able to do. So those are some of the things that we've been talking about, we'll continue to talk about as we go into 2016. But you know, our focus is to be close out this particular budget and move forward into the 16-17 budget discussion, which will begin on February 9th. We look forward to the governor's budget address. I'm not quite sure what he's going to say at this point in time. My hope is that he takes a very firm position that we must close out 15-16 first before we have a conversation about doing anything more on 16-17. I'm hoping also that he puts his very firm statement that we need to do more along those lines, and that we maybe put together a special session on budget, something that we should take a look at. So those are some of the things that are percolating here in Harrisburg. I want to spend some time answering questions that folks may have who are on the line, and open it up to question shoes if we can.
Mm-hmm. Senator, the first question we're going to get, and before I do that, just as a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Costa at any point this evening, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. We'll get you into the queue and get you on the line with the Senator as quickly as possible. Senator, we're going to go to John from Oakland. John, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, my name is John Kokalis. I'd like your comment on the disgrace of an effort by all of the congressmen and representatives and senators trying to balance a budget. And we're going to be into a new fiscal year, and we still don't have a balanced budget, and people's jobs were lost. We had to go 6 months without receiving income to try and make our agency work. And it was just little boys fighting in a sandbox to try to balance the budget when it just so horribly represented Pennsylvania.
John, I agree. I think we've not reflected Pennsylvania very well in this process, and I think we have to continue to work to try to get a balanced budget. The balance that was put forth by my colleagues in the Republican House and Republican Senate was not balanced. It was $500 million out of balance. So we have to go back to the table and try to figure out how we're going to generate the additional revenues to be able to close that gap. This budget of 30.26 that the Republicans have put forth includes some funding for higher education, but there's no money to pay for that. So that's going to be an issue as we go forward. At the end of the day, we had a structured agreement in place that all four of the five parties agreed to, and one of the four of the five parties walked away from that agreement. So we have to get back to work and do the best we can to put Pennsylvania back in a positive light. But we can't lose sight of the fact that we have some fiscal problems in Pennsylvania that require us to look at additional revenues.
John, thank you for the call. If you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Nancy in Edgewood. Nancy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening. I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you, and I'm calling regarding school taxes, which I know you, I believe, that you have worked on before, and it seems that everybody that's running for office, governor included, and I'm 75 years old. I've lived my whole life in 1 square mile of Edgewood, minus education time away, and it seems like everybody promises that when they're running, and then when they get in office, it kind of goes by the boards. This time, there was actually a proposal, I believe. It wasn't to eliminate school taxes. It was going to reduce them, but to raise the sales tax. Well, the raise the sales tax part's still in, but the school taxes have kind of gone by the board. And I believe that was one of the things you ran on, saying that the sales tax could help contribute to what the school taxes would have paid for. And I'm just wondering if there's ever going to be a time, because my house that I live in and have lived in for 40 years is kind of, you know, I think I may not be able to stay here because of that.
Well, thank you very much for your call. You're right on the mark when you talk about property taxes being a very major issue, not only in our district, but throughout the Commonwealth. You're right, the governor proposed something that we supported, which would have significantly reduced property taxes by about $1,000 or $1,200 on average to every household for the school taxes only, and would have necessitated an increase in the sales tax. That didn't happen, and Republicans walked away from that. And then we had a second agreement where we were going to do a little bit less than that. We were going to increase the personal income tax to be able to do that, and Republicans came back to us and said, we can't get the votes to do that as well. I can sit here and tell you that Democrats want to work on property tax relief. My colleague, Senator Judy Schwenk from Berks, originally from Pittsburgh, by the way, as well as Senator Boscola, Blake, Kadechek, myself, Brewster. I can go right down the line, and Fontana, the number of Democrats that want to work to be able to shift, begin a conversation about how we shift taxes away from property taxes, the burdensome property taxes in school districts, over to some other revenue stream that's going to pay for them. We've not been able to do that right now. The only property tax relief that every single homeowner gets right now relates to the property tax relief that we get from gaming. And every single resident gets that. And that's something that each school district, it ranges from anywhere from $180 to $350 in different school districts, depending upon the nature of the school district and the taxable situations there. But at the end of the day, that's been the only property tax relief we've enjoyed. We've also increased the property tax and rent rebate program, which I think has been beneficial to seniors. And I think one of the things that we're looking at doing, at least in the immediate future possibly, is doing something with the property tax and rent rebate program, growing the eligibility with respect to the income limits, or even possibly looking at a senior property tax freeze. But in both instances, you need to have a revenue source to replace the revenue that you're going to give up. And that's the nature of the conversation that has to take place. There's great reluctance to want to talk about the revenue side, and that's unfortunate.
Nancy, thank you for the call. If you got a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Ed in Penn Hills. Ed, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hey, Jay, this is Ed McLaughlin in Penn Hills, and I'm calling about this robocall that we've been getting out here in the Penn Hills area from a guy who says he's from the IRS, and if we don't call him back and set up an account with him for sending him money, he's going to have us all put in jail. And I have a neighbor that lives down the street. She's an elderly lady. She got a call, and she was just about crying because she thought she was going to be sent to jail. So I told her, I said, hey, don't even bother answering those calls.
Right.
But is there anything we can do to keep it from even coming in?
Well, Ed, I'm glad you told me about this. I have not heard it. I know I did receive a call like that about a year or so ago, and when you call back, you get nothing but a busy signal, and you can never get through. So just to see who it was. But I'm glad you brought it to my attention. I think what we'll do is maybe some type of a media advisory reminding folks not to, that the IRS is going to call you, they're not going to call you on the telephone and tell you to give them contact information. So based on what you're telling me, I'll have our folks look into it, and we'll put together some type of a media announcement or media advisory to let folks know not to do something along those lines.
Yeah, I think what Ed's referring to is an issue that I know the Attorney General has raised. The IRS will never make a phone call to you to schedule anything, neither with the Treasury. It's a scam that's going around that they've highlighted. So,
and what I think I can do, maybe in the same format that we do, the same way that we do these phone calls, maybe we can do a robocall to tell folks not to, and to be, you know, careful about who they talk to and what they talk about with folks. But I'm really glad you brought it to our attention. Thanks, buddy, very much.
Thanks, Ed, for the call. Center, we're going back to the callers. We're going to go to Tom. Tom, go ahead. You're live with Center Crosstalk. Tom, are you there?
Yeah, this is Tom Kerr. Yeah. I'm in the Penn Hills School District, and I have a question for you. The school district has gone $9 million over their budget for the last 2 years. They had no money this year to pay for their teachers at the beginning of the year. And if you're in agreement with the governor to raise all these taxes to throw more money at schools, I want you to convince me why I should throw money at a school if you can't manage your own money. Meanwhile, there's an official from the school district in court right now for throwing money away. So convince me why I should raise taxes to give them more money to throw away.
Well, two things. One, I'm not recommending that we raise taxes to throw more money at schools. What I'm saying on the property tax piece is that we shift it. We shift it away from property taxes and look to other revenue sources to replace that revenue. But you're right, Penn Hills, and I've had a lot of conversation with the folks in Penn Hills over the course of the past year and looked at some of the problems that arose there. We helped them structure what they needed to structure to get back on track with respect to loans and the borrowing that needed to take place, and I was happy to be able to do that. Going forward, I know that they've got, I think it's a $9 million structural hole that they've got to close, but I think this is the beginning of that process, and by the time the budget is enacted, my guess is that they'll take steps to reduce that, almost all of that, as they go forward or close to it. It's going to take another year or so before they get everything structured properly, as I understand it. Trust me, I don't want to throw good money after bad. What we've talked about with the governor and Senate Democrats have talked about is any new revenue that we make our way to our school districts, and we're looking to be able to do $350 million across the whole Commonwealth, it needs to be met with an explanation about how they're going to use those dollars and how they're going to use them efficiently, and to make certain that we also have back-end controls with respect to property taxes. So what we said was, as we drive those dollars out, we need to make sure that the school district tell us what they're going to use those dollars for. Is it going to be increasing class size, or reducing class size, I should say? Is it going to be increasing other programs? Is it going to be doing things along those lines? And what are they, and are going to grow, particularly the young early learning programs? And we got to make certain if that's what they say they're going to use those resources for, they need to come back and show us that they did do that. And going forward in future years, if they don't follow in accordance with what they said they would do, then we would then look to not provide those resources at that level again. But I'm not looking to throw good money after bad. Trust me, I think that's not the right approach. But where it does make sense to drive dollars into programs that work, and that's when you look at some of the accountability block grant programs about smaller class sizes, early learning programs, teacher training, all those type of things, I think, make sense for us to make investments along those lines.
Tom, thank you very much for the call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press R3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Marty in Squirrel Hill. Marty, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. I'm wondering about early childhood education to see if we're going to get any more in the budget this year and if you think that there'll be any increases in the next full budget.
Thanks, Marty. I, as you know, been a strong advocate, as you have been for years, on as much as we can for early learning. As I mentioned earlier, the best money we spend in Pennsylvania, in my view. I'm hopeful that we can get to the $50 million mark that was part of the framework agreement that we had agreed to a couple of months back that the Republicans walked away from. My hope is that between the pre-K program and the Head Start, which would have totaled 60 for this year, I'm still optimistic that we can get back to that number. But we have to get folks to the table and have negotiations. Going forward, the commitment, again, under the framework agreement was to do 50 and 10 again going forward, as well as 50 for special education. I'm hopeful we can get there, and we're going to push hard to be able to do that. But that continues to be a top priority for me and some members of our caucus. And as we go down this path, we're looking to be able to do that.
Marty, thank you very much for the call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Joe in Oakland. Joe, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Senator, hello. With all the beating, with all the beating you and your the opposite party's been getting, I first of all want to congratulate you for passing the appropriation for OVR. That freed up a lot of federal matching dollars that OVR has not had the benefit of for about 8 or 10 years. So if you voted for that, thank you very much. Secondly, if and when a budget is ever passed, what's the situation going to be with the state stores?
Well, the state stores handling the how we sell wine and spirits in Pennsylvania was part of the understanding that we had. We were going to do a budget that included the revenues that we talked about, but also wine and spirit modernization or slash privatization, as well as pension reform. On the Senate side, we passed those bills. We passed a piece of legislation dealing with pension reform that I supported that goes a long way to cutting down our pension costs. And then on the wine and spirits, I supported a measure that provided for essentially do a modernization proposal that would expand hours, expand off Sunday and weekend hours, allow for direct shipment of wines that would have allowed grocery stores to sell wine similar to what they do with beer now, as well as having our restaurants be in a position to sell a limited number of wines. That was a compromise proposal that made its way out of the Senate and now sits over in the House. That's kind of where that issue is at right now. And again, that was part of the original framework that we put together, that those would be four or five of the things that we would do to get the budget done. But unfortunately, one party walked away from this agreement, and hence we find ourselves at this really protracted impasse.
Joe, thanks for the call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. Now we're going to go to Marshall. But before we do, just as a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. Marshall, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator.
Good evening.
When I was a young man, I live in Homewood, Brushton. When I was a young man, there was a program that the city offered our Homewood citizens that they could purchase the abandoned properties for $100, and the city would subsidize the renovation of the property. When I brought this attention to my councilman, he sort of blew me off on that suggestion. And there was nothing more said about that at a town's meeting during election time. But to reinvest, I was talking to a lot of my friends and colleagues here in the Homewood Brushton area, and they would like to purchase these properties, redevelop the properties, rent them to wonderful families that would reinvest into our communities, that they could possibly upgrade the Homewood Brushton community and know that it could be a wonderful community to live in. And it's just a shame that we cannot do that because we have the lack of resources to do so. But if it were a program such as I mentioned earlier, it's affordable and we can reinvest in our community. Why doesn't our city councilmen, why doesn't a lot of our politicians try to make programs that would reinvest in our homes and just make our community vital and beautiful again?
Yeah, I love the idea, and I have supported economic development dollars into the communities for years and work closely with a lot of the municipalities and neighborhood groups that we've worked with over the years to drive resources for community revitalization, and that's what you're talking about. I'm a big proponent of putting dollars into economic development, community development programs. The budget that we should have been voting on had resources to be able to do that, working not only with PHFA on some programs. One, for example, Muffy program was one that we worked on, but a few other programs would have driven dollars out to the communities to be able to do that. And a lot of folks frown upon the fact that we are able to drive our resources to communities for programs like that. But I'm a big believer that those are investments, as you mentioned, revitalize the community, they stabilize the community, they bring families in or families stay in the community, and they continue to grow and foster good community relationships in the area that I think is beneficial, that has a win-win benefit to everyone involved, whether it be local or state or county, whoever the tax collectors might be. based upon real estate property taxes and the like. So investments like that are important, but in order to make investments, you have to have revenue and resources. We have a mindset here in Harrisburg with a lot of my colleagues that they don't want to make any additional resource investments. They want to manage decline. Well, I'm not about managing decline. I want to make investments and grow our communities, our streets, block by block as best we can, and that's what we're going to continue to do. Senate Democrats have been at the forefront of this issue. We have a program called Growth, Prosperity, and Sustainability, primarily for third-class cities but also large municipalities, that takes significant dollars from the states and drives them out into those cities to be able to help those cities be able to do exactly what you're talking about. So I'm all on board. We're going to continue to try to be able to do that. We did have some money set aside to do that in the state budget that the Republicans simply won't pass.
Marshall, thanks for the call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Janice. Janice, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes. I'm glad I was able to talk to you today. And what I was wondering is about what about the shale and this drilling? Are they going to be using that money and funds for education, or are they going to, that's what seems that they're saying, that they're not asking these companies to give more money that they can give?
Yeah, I think we certainly want the Marcellus Shale community to be part of the solution to our budget revenue crisis that we're dealing with. Right now, we collect about $220 million from the Marcellus industry. So that's what they pay in the impact fee or the impact tax. We think it needs to be probably double that amount, to be fair. And what we're trying to do is impose and put into place legislatively an extraction tax. We cannot get our Republican colleagues to support that. And that's a fact. I mean, the Democrats, some of the Republicans do want to do it, but we've got a handful of leaders here who simply do not want to allow for a discussion about the Marcellus Shale tax. And it's frustrating, and the idea would be to use it as part of the revenue that we need to grow our education line items. But, you know, as much as we want to do it, that's our top of our priority list. Republican leadership has said no, including our Speaker, Mike Thurzai, who has out and out said there's no way in heck that we're going to do a Marcellus Shale tax on his watch. So it becomes problematic for us, and we have to work to be able to overcome that. But there's certainly support for it in the General Assembly, whether it be the House or the Senate. There is support. If members were given the opportunity to vote on it, it would pass. But they're not being given that opportunity by their leadership.
Janice, thank you very much. Senator, we're going to go to Charlene in the East Hills. Charlene, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. My question is this. The streets in Pittsburgh are horrible, okay? For 5 years, we've been trying to get our street repaired. Not patched, but repaired. And every time we go to one of these meetings or talk to someone, they're always saying that, you know, they had money, they don't have the money to do this, that, and the other. But our area never gets the street repaired. So how do we go about to get our street repaired? You know, now, and where does how is the money allotted to do street repair? Because for one thing, one year our street was on a list to get repaired, and the next thing we know, the Squirrel Hill District ended up getting their street done.
Well, so you're in the city of Pittsburgh. I would suggest, you know, we don't control who the money that the city of Pittsburgh gets for street either repair, paving, or maintenance, or whatever needs to be done, milling and the like. That's something that's controlled totally at the local level. So I would suggest the first place to stop would be at your councilman's office and speak with your councilman. And I'm happy if you tell me what street it is, I'll try to do what I can to find out how we can deal with it. I also recommend you contact the chief of operations there, my brother Guy. Call him and say you spoke to me, and I will talk to him as well about how to go about getting a street on the list. I know that they've done a lot of computerized modeling that tells them what streets need to be done and which ones don't, and they have some process. I can also tell you the last couple of years with some of the resources that are making their way to the city from the transportation funding plan we put into place, they've been able to do more milling and maintenance and the like. So we got to just figure out the best way to get that street on the list, if in fact it is a city street that they're allowed to pave. What's the name of the street?
We lost Charlene, but we'll have her phone number. And
okay, we'll give you a call back.
Our district office.
Yeah, we'll check in with you and get the street, and I'll get it down to the city folks and get an explanation as what the process might be and how you can assure that street be redone.
Charlene, thank you very much for your questions, and we're going to go back to the callers. But again, before we do, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Armand in Penn Hills. Armand, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator.
My name is
Armand Castelli. I lived in Penn Hills. I am a World War II veteran, and what I'm asking for is not going to cost the state much of any money. What I want to know is why there's such a delay in passing the medical marijuana bill. You know, there are many of us who have so much need for it. I'm in pain. I served in World War II in the Pacific. I know what pain is. Well, why do I have to spend my time now being denied something to be useful to me and to a lot of the people that we can't have? You people are always fighting about money. Well, this I don't see where it's going to cost any money. Can you please tell me what the delay is?
Yes, Armand, I can certainly tell you the delay is the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. I voted for it twice last year and again this year. In 14 and then 2015. I support it. Just about every one of my colleagues in the Senate support it. The problem is that the House of Representatives simply do not want to take up the bill right now. They have a few folks in their leadership, Republicans that is, they have a few folks in their leadership who don't agree with this and are doing everything they can to stop it from happening. I think you need to contact Speaker Mike Terzai's office and ask him why he's not in favor of it and why he doesn't allow it to move for a vote. I will tell you that if it's given a vote in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, it would pass overwhelmingly. So you've got a few folks who are, for whatever reason, philosophically opposed to it, and they're not letting the process move forward. But we did our work in the Senate. We passed it, and we're going to continue to encourage our colleagues in the House to do what's right.
Armand, thank you very much for the call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Dale in Squirrel Hill. Dale, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator.
Good evening, Dale.
Most people don't seem to have any awareness of the vulnerability to our electrical grid. Recently, Ted Koppel, a renowned reporter, wrote a book called Lights Out, where he goes over all the vulnerability, all the enemies we have, the hackers, and countries that could put us out, not for a week or two like a storm, but for months, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. And what I want to see is at least our local governments that supply us with water and sewage, that they can continue to operate, they can provide their own electricity, that they have enough chemicals for 3, 4, 5 months on site. So if this ever would happen and we're out for a long length of time, at least our society won't break down so far like we're in Haiti or some third world country. And I don't see that on the radar anywhere in our state government or our local governments. I wonder if you have any comments. And if you haven't read the book, you ought to get it, and you ought to supply it to everybody on the water authority and sewage authorities.
Well, thank you. I have not had a chance to read the book, and I will take you up on your recommended reading. I can tell you that our PUC, our Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission, oversees our utilities. And I do know that they have at least one or two members that I know of that focus on what would happen if we had any type of security breakdown where there might be something that would occur either intentionally or unintentionally that would impact our ability to have electrical services, water and sewer services, and the like. And I know that they do have folks there, and but I'm not so sure that they make their contingency plans very public and how they would address that, but that's something I will look into. But I do think it's important that we recognize that we have a lot of vulnerabilities and that we take a lot of things for granted. When we flip the switch in our home, the lights go on. That could not always be the case. So I think that's a very, very good point you raise. But I do know that the PUC has folks that address this, what I call cybersecurity issues, particularly related to the utilities. And I can double check to make sure and recommend to them some of the things you talked about.
Dale, thank you very much. Senator, we're going to go now to Diane, who's been waiting a little while. Diane, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. My name is Diane McKibbitz. I'm calling to ask you how you stand on Senate Bill 1080. And if you're not familiar or your callers aren't familiar, that's a bill to give relief to the sewage bills that are so high. Recently, one of your townsmen, Hall, had a significant increase.
We support, I'm trying to think, it's a House bill, if I'm not mistaken, right? House Bill 1080?
No, it's a Senate bill.
Okay, I know there's a
House bill has not been brought to the floor. The Senate bill has been brought to the committee. The House bill has not been brought to committee yet.
No, I believe that that's one of the things that I will be supporting when it comes to me. We have not had a chance to vote on it or bring it up yet, but that's something. I'm looking on the computer right now to see what the status is right now as we speak. But that's something you support?
We just lost her. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the legislation deals, and she mentioned an issue in Mont Hall. And
right. I know that there was a rally that took place over the course of the past week or so, and but I think that we can take a look at that. But I think it's something I've already indicated my support for.
Diane, thank you very much for your call. If you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. I encourage you to do so. We're rolling through some calls here now. Senator, we're going to go back to the street. We're going back to the callers now. We're going to go to Marcia in Wilkinsburg. Marcia, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thank you, Representative Jay Costa, for being a champion for children and families, a family-centered movement. I'm a grandparent, and grandparents have increased in the family centers, either mandate or voluntary. And my children grew up in family support, so that's why the family support movement is very important. Right now, my grandbaby is with me. I want to share about, I'm a senior citizen young, 62, and I'm a licensed driver. I have concerns with your reconfiguration of 2014, all of the 43 districts. How is the revenue allocated? And reason why I'm saying is, it seemed like some areas, it seemed like they funded more, and I'm noticing more of the lighting. Since I'm a driver, and I was concerned maybe my age, that I didn't want to give up driving, but I noticed a lot of areas is light, and then some areas is dark. So I want to bring that to attention, and one spot is Penn Hills. I was driving, then I made this right turn with my sister, and it was very dark, couldn't see. And then also, too, they tend to have a lot of plumbing situation, and I know that's local, but I know it may be hard to maybe do something instead of patching it, because a lot of those faithful voters, and they work very hard, they always inconvenience of not having water, because every time they turn around, they're working on the pipes.
Yeah, you're right. I think that...
I know I had a lot.
That's all right. But thank you very much, and thank you for what you do with your grandchildren. I think that's wonderful. And I have been a strong supporter for the Family Service Centers, and they really provide a great service. Folks don't know too much about them, I don't think, but when you got a family that needs some help and some wraparound services, and bringing and unifying the community, that they do awesome work all over the area. So thank you for that. Yeah, we have some municipal issues with our water and sewer lines. We have to do more. The previous caller talked about the legislation that Senator Brewster is doing, I think is important work. And I compliment Senator Brewster on the work he's trying to do on Senate Bill 1080. We've got to get it moving, got to get it out of committee and create that conversation about it. But I do think, though, that a number of the things that we have to look at center around some of those municipal services that are provided, whether through utilities or through local governments that provide, whether it's street lighting or whether it's water and sewer lines. You know, we have to make investments. We just can't not let these things go. We've done that in the past, and that's helped create some of the problems that we have, particularly with our sewer lines all throughout Western Pennsylvania.
Marcia, thank you very much for your call, Senator. We're going to go to Carrick next, to Karen. But before we do, just a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. Karen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, Senator Costa. I have a question for you. How do we, the people, get our senators and our representatives to work on a pure bill, for lack of a better term, a one-subject bill? Don't tack on five other things and pay raises behind it and all this other junk. Just if you're going to vote on school taxes, make it school taxes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And quite frankly, we have a lot of laws in place that don't allow us to do that. And you don't see that happening in the last 10 or 12 years or so that I could speak of. Bills today have, we're subject to what's called a single subject rule. And if we're going to start talking about property taxes, then it's got to be property taxes, and it can't be something unrelated to that. All of our bills are categorized by titles, whether it be like Title 18 would be criminal offenses, Title 42 would be courts, Title 75 would be automobiles and vehicles and the vehicle code. They're all categorized, and the bills have to have a relevance to that particular subject matter. So the days of where it used to be called Christmas treeing, a whole bunch of other stuff on the bills, doesn't happen like it used 2 years ago.
Karen, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go to back to the callers. We're going to go to Cookie. Cookie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, hello. Good evening, everyone. I have two questions for you. One, I want to hitchhike on Charlene about the street being repaved and asphalted. I lived here at the 7800 block of Fisher for 30 years. In the 30 years I've lived here, this street has been paved one time.
Is it Fisher in the city of Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Okay.
Where the old St. Clair used to be?
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
Where the old St. Clair used to be? Yeah, we haven't had our street paved one time in 30 years. The other issue I have is, like I said, with Charlene, was the pavement. We had a neighbor across the street that went and got some asphalt from some guys that were working two streets over. We had potholes up here so bad, he filled them up himself, drove back and forth with his own car to have that asphalt set in them potholes, which I think was ridiculous that he had to do that. The second concern I have is that we can't get anyone up here to pave or salt our street during any snowstorms. If you go to the 311 center and you pull the reports of how many calls they've received from the neighbors up here, it's ridiculous. And no one's ever came and did anything. I've gone to block watch meetings. I've gone to talk to Krause. And it seems like we're almost like the forgotten kids, like from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that little story, the Misfits.
Yeah.
That's how we feel up here. And we pay taxes.
Yeah, you're right. Well, let me say this. You said Fisher Street, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring it not into the attention of Bruce Krause, but Councilman Krause, but I will bring it to attention to the Chief of Operations and find out what the story is with respect to the paving, but also the snow plowing and the like. So I can't guarantee a 100% change along those lines, but they will certainly hear from me that there have been concerns raised on that issue, and I will follow up on it.
And tell them, please tell them it's not the red brick road that goes on the Mount Oliver side. It's the city side of Fisher Street.
City side of Fisher Street. We got it.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cookie.
Thank you both. Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Senator, we're going to go back to your caller. Senator, we're going to go to, I want to go back down here to David in Munhall. David, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Jay. It's Dave Honor from Munhall.
Hey, Dave.
Recently, UPMC had an article in the paper concerning the erection of a new hospital in Pleasant Hills. Now, they're going to go out there, and they're going to be in direct competition with a very fine hospital, Jefferson.
Right.
And it just seems to me that, you know, it's they're duplicating, and that by doing this, costs are going to go up. What's your feeling on this?
I agree with you 100%. I don't like the move. It's predatory in my view. You've got a good hospital in Jefferson there, and it's just unnecessary competition. It doesn't necessarily need to be there, and it will drive up costs. Just about 2 hours ago, I met with the officials from Highmark, three officials, Dan Honorato, like one of their top officials, and a few other folks. On this issue, they're very concerned about the impact it's going to have not only on Jefferson, but also what does that mean to McKeesport? Will it force McKeesport to close? What's the impact going to be on Upper St. Clair's Hospital? Beyond that, I met with Senator Dawn White, who came and spoke with me on this issue. We had a conversation also earlier this afternoon on this issue, and he, too, is concerned. He's the chairman of the Banking and Insurance Committee, so he has a lot of influence in this area. Together, we're brainstorming about what steps we might be able to take to slow this thing down or prevent it from happening, but I'm opposed to it. I think it's a bad move. One of the things that we can do is look to the Attorney General under their the charitable division of their group. They're required to have a charitable purpose. And to me, when you are exerting a predatory type action against another facility, when you're within like 3,000 feet of another facility to duplicate the services, it's going to drive up costs, as you said, and it's just not a charitable purpose in my view. That's not consistent with their mission. So we're going to ask them to take a look at it, but we're waiting to put together something along those lines, and we have more information about what they want to do. But I am not a fan of what they're doing. I think it's wrong, and I think it can have unintended consequences, or probably unintended consequences on McKeesport, but also on Upper St. Clair and certainly on Jefferson. It's wrong. We have too many beds. We already have too many health care beds in the system to begin with. We don't need to have more.
David, thank you very much for your call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, we're rolling through the call so we can get you up and on live with Senator very quickly. I press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Shirley in Squirrel Hill. Shirley, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa.
Hi, Shirley.
I'm at the Forward Shady Apartments. And
oh, sure.
My, yeah.
Mike,
yes, you have. My question is this. Do you feel that the upcoming election will have an impact, perhaps, on the makeup of the state Senate and House of Representatives?
Boy, I wish I could tell you it would change it, but I don't believe that to be the case. In the Senate, I can tell you that we are, because of the redistricting that took place, by the Republicans and upheld by the Republican court that really gerrymandered the lines to the detriment of Democrats, we are in a defensive mode. So we've got seats in Johnstown area and in Harrisburg area, that's, you know, the more urban settings and parts of urban settings of the state that become much more Republican, the way they crafted the lines. So we're going to be defending. We hope to have success in the 37th District in Allegheny County. Hold on to Erie, and we're looking in Delaware County for an opportunity. But even if we were successful on all those places, it would still leave us behind a significant number of Senate seats. The House also has many challenges as well, so we're both in sort of defensive mode to hold on to what we have. I don't see a change in the majority slash minority of the Senate. I think it's going to remain Republican in both of those areas. We hope to make gains, but, you know, folks have a divided government. They voted for a Democratic governor and the Republican General Assembly, and we have to figure out the right way to work through this.
Shirley, thank you very much for your call. If you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Churchill next for Margie. Margie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator, and thank you for hosting this town hall conference. I would like to discuss with you, I know the governor wanted to increase the personal income tax from 3.07% to 3.3%. This tax, of course, would affect every working Pennsylvanian in the state, and it hits more than 5 million workers and a quarter of a million of small business owners. And that helps the employees, about half the state's workforce. It is a stifling tax burden, and it does come at a time when our economy is lagging behind other states in income, job, and especially population growth. High taxes drive people away, and they do drain our state of financial resources. What is our governor, what is his plan to spur economic growth and to ensure that we have a population growth? I have friends that have, they still have a home here in Pittsburgh, but their main residence now is in Florida, and it is because of taxes. So what is the goal of our state? Because right now we're looking like a banana republic.
You're right. We don't look very good right now given the crisis that we're facing. I think folks need to recognize that we're facing a pretty significant fiscal crisis. So when you say that people look at us like the Banana Republic, I think all they need to do is look at our fiscal statements. And what they'll see is over the course of the past 4 years, we've experienced 5 bond downgrades. That means that because we've not addressed the revenue shortcomings that we have in the Commonwealth, we've made our state's fiscal situation unstable. And that means that bond rating agencies look at us and say, you're not worthy of a rating of that is of a high, you know, no risk. So we have a sort of a high risk rating level right now. That means we're paying a lot more money for interest in the borrowing that we do. If we don't do anything right now, and the budget that we have in place, we're looking at a $500 million budget shortfall this year. And if we don't do anything this year, next year that grows to $2.5 billion. And now while one would argue that we shouldn't look at the personal income tax, and we haven't done that for the past, I think it was in 2003 was the last time we addressed it. Go back and look at your property taxes over the course of that period of time. And look at your property tax increases that have taken place over the course of the past 4 years. So I would argue with you that as small businesses also pay property taxes, you know, their property taxes have gone up significantly. In fact, 80% of the school districts experience a property tax increase, not because, you know, they go to, this is local money, by the way, that goes to local schools and local communities, largely because we've made a significant disinvestment in education. So we may not have raised taxes and made this spending here at the state level, but we've just pushed it down to the local level. So we switched to places where folks are dealing with that impact. I think what the governor wants to do, first and foremost, what he wanted to do was lower the corporate net income tax from 9.99 down to 5.99 and then down to 4.99 by implementing the Delaware loophole or the combined reporting, and then taking those revenues and driving them back into the budget to be able to save us hundreds of millions of dollars along those lines. That's been rejected by our Republican colleagues. The idea of the PIT, when we first talked about it, it was put into place along with the sales tax to reduce property taxes. Not that it was going to generate more money for the general fund, but rather to reduce property taxes. So, and I think at the end of the day, people believe that the personal income tax is far less regressive than a sales tax. Sales tax, I think, particularly as it relates to folks of modest and less modest income, it disproportionately impacts their ability to pay. So for the variety of reasons why we find ourselves in this predicament and where he wants to try to raise money, so what the plan is to be able to make investments to help grow jobs in Pennsylvania. When we grow jobs and we put people to work, that's when the tax revenues come in that allow us to do what we have to do so we can work to lower our taxes. And that's one of the things the governor proposed, lowering our business taxes. And by the way, we've done that over the course of the past number of years I've been here. I voted for every single business tax cut. And I can tell you, it seems like it's never enough. And what we've not done is been able to do things that make investments. And we can either manage decline or we can make investments. And I think most folks want us to try to make investments in education and human services and at job growth that's going to help us to do what we need to do in Pennsylvania.
Margie, thank you very much for your call. If you have a question for Senator Acosta, I press star 3 on your phone, and we'll get you on with Jay as soon as possible. Our next caller comes from Tony in Penn Hills. Tony, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Good evening, Senator Acosta. First of all, I want to thank you so much for doing these phone conversations. I'm a retired teacher. I taught senior English at Penn Hills High School, and I used to stand in the classroom and say, our government officials truly do care about us, and I hope they're aware of what you're doing. My question is, there's some concern about, and we have very little information about what's going on with Churchill Valley Country Club. Supposedly there's going to be some drilling there, and a lot of the residents have no idea because there are a lot of conflicting tales about what's happening. We are concerned, of course, because we hear both sides of, is it safe, is it not safe? How do we as concerned citizens get enough information that we can either oppose or feel that this is a good idea?
Thank you very much, and thank you for your service to our kids in Penn Hills.
Oh, thank you.
Because it's always been a school district that's enjoyed a good reputation.
I will say that
Churchill Valley Country Club, I believe that there was a meeting in Churchill months ago. I was not able to attend because I was up here. But I think they passed an ordinance that would basically not allow any drilling to take place at that particular location. I think they've managed it or limited it to a very small area. not around that particular site, but I think there's been a carve out for, I think, the ability to do some drilling, but it's unlikely to take place, and I think it's on the old Westinghouse property, and I've had conversation with folks there. So I don't anticipate any drilling taking place in Churchill anytime soon, and we're not in favor of that because I think it's too densely populated and too much of a residential community for that purpose. How do we learn more about it? You know, I think that there are a number of sites that are out there where I think you can get unbiased opinions on success that we, you know, of the industry and failures of the industry. What I believe to be the case, and this is my belief, I think the industry is a lot more in tune with the concerns that have been raised over the course of the past several years than what they were 5 years ago, let's say, or 4 years ago. We have a long way to go. We have a lot of challenges along the lines of how they become much more safe and some of the environmental impacts that they're permitted to do. And I think that we have a lot of work to do along those lines. But there are independent sources out there that are not one way or the other that will provide you with that relevant information. We certainly look to places like Penn Future and those places and others that provide good information as well. But I think they'll be helpful along those lines.
Tony, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go to Audrey in Homestead. Audrey, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
Well, Audrey, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm blessed. I'm blessed. Praise the Lord. Listen, I'm not going to hold you but a minute, but you know I'm still at the high rise.
Are you really? Good for you. That's good.
Doing the judge of election.
All
and
right.
I've been doing that for the last 30 years, but you know, I've been in the wheelchair the last 20-something. But my reason for calling you is the people down here won't come out and vote because they say they don't know who they're voting for. They want someone to come down and talk to them. The people that they're voting for, they usually send someone in their place. But if you find time, you know, you can talk to Ms. Young, Thelma, and
oh,
maybe
sure.
You could get some of them down here to talk to these people because very few of them come out to vote. And I'm going to always, you know, as long as I can be the judge, I'm going to always come out so that we can keep the polls on the grounds and they won't have to go off the grounds to vote.
That's a good point. It's a good point, Audrey. You want to make sure they vote because the folks in the towers, you don't want them to have to either go up and down 8th Avenue or go some up the hill to vote or something. So I agree with you. So I'm happy to come down and pay a visit. Why don't we, I'll have either Bob or Joe reach out to you, you or Thelma, and maybe have a chance to come by and say hello and maybe talk with the residents at the towers. Happy to do it.
Audrey, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go to the next call. We're going to go to Paul. Paul, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. This is Paul O'Hanlon from Squirrel Hill. And
hey, Paul.
Again, thank you for doing this. You're one of the best we've got, and I appreciate that. What I want to talk about is the budget impasse, and particular the people who've been suffering, which I think have largely been people receiving human services and schools over this budget impasse. And what I want to do is draw this into the whole issue of voter registration. So as you know, I'm looking at the state's official Department of State report on voter registration by agencies that are required to provide voter registration, which includes schools and disability service agencies. And even though, for example, with disability service agencies, there are about 1.1 million Pennsylvanians receiving some form of disability services, either at the state level or the county level, and we have, as according to what I'm looking at right now, about 131,000 12th graders in our schools. And yet, when I look at the official voter registration, only 579 people were registered by disability agencies, 500 out of 1.1 million, and only 341 registrations from both schools and universities, public universities. And now, I would assert that there's a partisan issue there, but I think there's also a nonpartisan issue because I don't care whether those people are registered Democrat or Republican. Their legislator is more likely to be responsive to them if they're a registered voter than if they're not. So I'm wondering if you would support me to ask the Auditor General to do a performance audit of these entities who have duties under the National Voter Registration Act to provide regular voter registration services, because the data that the state has shows that it ain't happening. I mean, just 1 million people getting 500 registrations a year, that's statistically
I can do that. I will reach out to Auditor General Eugene DePasquale, who, by the way, does a very, very good job. I've been happy to ask him to take a look at that issue.
Paul, thank you very much for your question. Yep, Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Frank. Frank, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you. Senator, I live in Penn Hills, near the intersection of Frankstown and Verona Road. And at that area, there is a fire hall, which uses its civil defense siren frequently to call to the aid of those who need first responders. Well, the problem is that it just wakes up the entire neighborhood. And this is an entire system that has been in place in Penn Hills ever since I was a little one. And it's outgrown, you know, its need is really not as necessary as it once was, because we don't use, you know, the bucket brigade to put out a fire at a home. Surrounding communities, they also don't use, you know, their sirens like in that fashion to wake up neighbors, the citizens in their communities to put out fires, because they don't call upon them. And I was trying. I wrote the letter to the mayor at the time, asking him to step away from this practice and go to a more direct approach, call the firefighter, and have them respond to the firehouse without waking us up.
I can appreciate what you're saying. I don't live too far from my local in Forest Hills, my fire company, and we oftentimes hear the fire alarms as well. And I, you know, there are different technologies now that I think could be employed, and that's something we can take a look at. I will share it with Mayor Kuhn as well as the folks at the Penn Hills Volunteer Fire Organization. If we're thinking about shifting to doing something along the lines of a paid volunteer fire company, I mean, that's a major or significant expense that may not be something that's doable right now. So that way you'd have a paid fire company that would be in-house, so to speak. I don't know whether or not folks are ready for that in the community. But I do think, though, that something I can bring to the attention of the mayor as well as the fire folks at Penn Hills.
Senator, I know we're coming down the stretch here. I know you have some concluding comments for those that have joined us here this evening.
Oh, yes. Very pleased to have a significant number of calls. And for folks that we haven't been able to touch base with, we'll reach out to you and try to get your questions answered. But, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to folks, and I think this is a good way when we're in Harrisburg here to communicate back with the folks in the district to get an understanding of some of the issues that are important to them. And we've got a couple things that we're going to follow up on, Fisher Street and a few other things that we're going to do to get some information. Reach out to the Auditor General, talk to the Penn Hills Mayor. We're going to talk to fire guys and try to see what we can do on some of the things that have been raised here today. And we look forward to continue to have these conversations with folks as we go forward. So thanks, everyone. I enjoyed our conversation.
And just as a reminder, if you didn't have a chance to ask your question, please remain in the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for Senator Costa, and he'll get back to you. Thank you again for participating. And again, if you have a question and you want to call Senator Costa's office, the phone number is 412-241-6690. Or you can visit Senator Costa's website at www.senatorcosta.com. Thank you for joining us this evening. Have a pleasant evening.